Let me just first of all say thank you all for coming tonight to listen to me share with you some of my experiences around meditation and healing. I'd like to apologize first to let you know that I do need to read my notes because I do have a history of an anoxic brain injury which has affected my short-term memory, so I'm not able to hold on to information very long, including what I've just said. sometimes that's a blessing and sometimes it's not. So anyway, I will read my notes, but I will try to do it with interest and reflection. So I encourage you to join me and open your hearts to hearing what I have to say. The other part of what I hope to share this evening with you is some artwork that I've developed as a way of expressing some of this journey I've been on in recovery with respect to the brain injury portion. I've brought a collage, which I'll show you later, as well as some artwork using fiber art, to give you a sense of the depth with which my practice has evolved and allowed me to, if you will, see these various realms and understandings very deep within my own body and psyche. So those will be expressions of that process, which I hope to share with you later, okay? So, thank you for your attention. Now I get to wear my glasses. Okay. The title of my talk is Health Challenges, Healing and Practice, Development of the Five Spiritual Faculties. I would like to relate to you how my meditation practice and cultivation and strengthening of the five spiritual faculties has developed over the years and why I found it so helpful when dealing with my complex healthcare concerns and needs. Begin by telling you a little more about myself. I'm 47 years old and I'm a retired family nurse practitioner. I began a formal insight, this is a repeat, I realize, a formal insight meditation practice in 1995 at the Friends Meeting House in Palo Alto with Gil Fronsdale. I went on my first residential meditation treat about a year later and discovered that I had a natural talent for entering the jhanas, the deep meditative states of concentration absorption spoken of by the Buddha. I then did several residential jhana retreats with Lee Brazington and cultivated the natural talent I was given. My jhana meditation practice has been a serious integral part of my life since that time and has played a very important role in my life at this point as well. I'd like to share with you some personal medical information that'll give you some background about myself. I was born with a fairly common genetic disorder of connective tissue called the Marfan syndrome. It affects roughly 1 in every 3 to 5,000 people throughout the world. There are roughly 200,000 people in the United States with Marfan syndrome. It primarily affects the heart, the eyes, and the skeletal system. Oftentimes, individuals with this disorder are at risk, high risk for aortic aneurysms and dissections at an early age. Both my sister and I were diagnosed with this disorder in 1962, when I was 5 years old. My father was the first in our family to have this disorder. He died in 1959 of an aortic aneurysm that dissected and ruptured. He was 21 years old, 6 feet tall, and bore many of the skeletal features associated with the disorder, such as long, thin arms and legs, long, skinny fingers and toes, chest deformity, scoliosis, and nearsightedness. I was 18 months old, and my younger sister, who was also affected, was 6 weeks old when he died. As for me, I have had 5 open-heart operations to replace my mitral and aortic valves with mechanical valves, and I have also had ascending and descending thoracic aortic aneurysms repaired. I've also undergone spinal surgery for dural ectasia, which are spinal cysts to be removed. Again, part of the Marfan syndrome problems. I've also had inguinal hernias repaired. My sister, who I mentioned earlier, is also affected, died at the age of 20 of a cardiac arrhythmia. In February of 2002, while I was on a meditation retreat in Cloud Mountain in Washington State, I experienced a cardiac arrest brought on by a cardiac arrhythmia. I was unconscious and received manual CPR for 20 to 25 minutes before being defibrillated twice by the EMTs. I was transported to the local hospital and spent 3 weeks in the ICU, where I was placed on a respirator and contracted pneumonia twice. I lost 15 pounds while lying in a bed and breathing. The initial lack of oxygen to my brain induced a grand mal seizure during the time of the arrest and is responsible for the acute, severe short-term memory loss that I am left with today. Following the arrest, Andrea, my friend here, my husband Steve, and my mother came to be with me in Washington. I don't have memory of that time other than what I've been told by my family and friends. Andrea told me that during the time I was in the hospital, I appeared to be in a state of pure love. It appeared as if all my filters were down. My short-term memory was barely working. I had no idea what was going on, really unable to track or follow anything. I had to be told several times about what happened to me, and it didn't seem to bother me that I couldn't remember. It wasn't until 3 weeks later, when I was on a plane ride home, that I looked over my left shoulder and saw the clouds go by, that I began to connect with this world again. I can still see my mother seated across from me, facing me with a look of concern on her face. I began to take in what was going on, what had happened. The air flight attendant, that nurse that was with me, was monitoring all the equipment that I was hooked up to. I was transferred back home to Stanford Hospital by Life Flight Jet by the third week and spent another week in the Stanford's ICU where I had an AV node ablation to control my arrhythmia and a pacemaker defibrillator implanted. I now have mild to moderate congestive heart failure and chronic atrial fibrillation, and my defibrillator has activated several times, and I'll just say that it is not a very pleasant feeling when that happens. Following the Stanford Hospital stay, I underwent 5 months' worth of weekly rehabilitation therapy, which has helped me rejoin the world again and learn how to cook my meals, do my laundry, drive my car, and take myself to the grocery store. I learned many skillful habits and rituals and routines to help me remind me of the things I need to do on a daily basis. The sense of who I am has softened, has shifted, and yet I have become increasingly more acutely aware of everything, even more than before. My brain continues to heal and to wake up, if you will, from the anoxic injury it experienced 3 years ago. It continues to show signs of becoming increasingly sensitive and awake. On April 1st of 2003, I had a descending thoracic aortic aneurysm repaired at Stanford. I experienced a grand mal seizure, which was provoked by spinal meningitis during the immediate postoperative period. This was my second seizure, my first being the one when I had the cardiac arrest in February of 2002. I had to take anticonvulsants for a year to prevent further seizure activity. And since then, I've been feeling pretty fortunate. I'm grateful, as you can tell, for very small adjustments in my life, such as not having to take antiarrhythmics again for a while, hopefully. Anyway, okay. I'd like to talk more about the progression of my mind's healing ability and what I've done to support this process. Looking back, I can see how the five faculties have been playing an integral part in the healing process, how my mind, sense of self, is actually coming back together. It's reforming itself. And my heart, I think, as a result of all this, has been inclined more than ever towards liberation. In my search to better understand my experience, I came across the writings of P.M.H. Atwater, in a book titled The New Children, The Near-Death Experiences. This is my impression of what she wrote. She suspects that Abraham Lincoln had two near-death experiences during She suspects that Abraham Lincoln had two near-death experiences, one during a drowning accident as a 5-year-old boy, and possibly again when he was kicked in the head by a horse at age 10. And I'd like to read this quote to you from her book. Among the characteristics suggestive of a brain shift or spirit shift that Lincoln came to exhibit, one was loss of fear of death, a love of music and solitude, unusual sensitivity to sound and light and food, sensing in multiples, wildly prolific psychic abilities, preference for mysticism over religion, absorption tendencies or merging, dissociation or detachment, susceptibility to depression and moodiness, increased allergies, regular future episodes, future memory episodes, hauntingly accurate visions, the ability to abstract and concentrate intensely, cluster thinking, charisma, moral upliftment, a brilliant mind, perseverance in the face of problems and obstacles, and a driving passion about his life's destiny. Certainly the argument can be made that Lincoln's many idiosyncrasies were the result of his extreme poverty as a youth, coupled by a relentless determination to succeed. Yet nothing during his early years indicated genius, none of his unusual talents appeared until after he had survived two close brushes with death. As an adult, he nearly died again and once more displayed signs that he might have yet had another near-death episode with additional after effects. And I woke up this morning with the thought that the Buddha might have had a near-death experience prior to his awakening that sort of came to me, and that's why I chose to bring it into my talk today. And I remembered he put himself through some pretty extreme ascetic practices, which he could have very near brought him very close to death. And the miracle of the bowl that swam upstream that confirmed his faith and allowed him to turn himself around and discover the middle way. So I reflected on this morning. And then after accepting the porridge from the woman who approached him and receiving enough strength to go on, he found the Bodhi tree. And you all know the rest of the story. Rediscovering the story of the Buddha and reflecting on this possibility makes me love and respect the Buddha within me even more. My heart is encouraged and uplifted yet again by his example, even if it is only what I think it is. Okay. Following the arrest, everything came in full force: sights, sounds, smells, textures, tastes, and thoughts. Any combinations of these could easily overwhelm me. My mind would become unsteady, rickety, and prone to running away. I would literally check out from my experience because everything taken in together felt so overwhelming. All my filters were damaged or destroyed. The arrest left me with several interesting developments. It has altered my sense of time, internal vision, sight, color, perception, sounds, smells, and tastes. It's as if someone removed a filter that kept me from experiencing the true depth and beauty of everyday things. There's an appreciation for a gradual growing sense of steadiness in my mind's daily experiences. Looking back, I have a sense that the arrest had the effect of crashing my hard drive, literally, and that the powerful and deeper places of my mind, my desire to be free of suffering, was what rebooted my brain. It is my deepest heartfelt desire to be free from suffering, and that is what survived. That is what has rebooted me. The overall effect, having blown, fired my hard drive, was that of removing or damaging the existing filters, habits and routines, concepts and views my mind had constructed around myself and my world over the years. My mind has set about gradually reconstructing new filters. The Buddhist teachings have given me some wonderful material to rebuild with. By choosing the training, I am rewarded and feel very grateful for the numerous small miracles that comprise and surprise each of my days. The Buddhist teachings continue to shape, refocus, develop my mind, and heal my body. Joseph Goldstein wrote in Seeking the Heart of Wisdom, in his teaching, the Buddha spoke of five spiritual faculties, qualities that bring power and balance to our mind and form an essential part on the path to freedom. Meditation is a process by which we develop these qualities so they become strong and enduring forces touching every aspect of our lives. I have a daily sitting practice and attend weekly group sittings and hear Dharma talks. It was very hard to meditate the first year following the arrest. My mind felt very slow, had little interest in anything. I could sit down and bliss out by myself or get lost in my salad when I ate my lunch. I relied on grace and faith during this time of healing. I had the inner sense that everything was just as it should be, that nothing was missing. There was no urge to do anything more than pay attention to as much as I could hold on to and let go of the self-critical thoughts and feelings when they arose. Later, as I began to work with a therapist and do the daily exercises they required of me, I learned to apply effort and faith together. I had to believe that what they were asking me to work on would eventually help my brain to recover. Math problems were hardest and are still difficult for me at times. Back then, I seemed to be able to absorb into the problem, but not find much desire or satisfaction in doing anything about it or with it. My mind felt lazy. It took my calling up effort, the second faculty, to get myself to apply myself and persevere, to concentrate and perform what was asked of me. I share all this information about myself with you to hopefully give you an idea of the severity of the situation I found myself in and the challenges that I've had to face with my mind and body. It has been a 3-year process, and I have a sense of coming back together. I can see how the daily practices have impacted and generated the healing I've experienced. I've come to look upon awareness faculty as a fine tool that can be strengthened and reinforced with practice. All my senses have become heightened. My ability to hone in and bear down and absorb into anything I practice my attention on has been getting stronger. It's as if I can intentionally include or exclude any or all parts or pieces of my experience at will. I've had to learn to do this in order to cope with a tremendous amount of information flooding my senses. This is an example of developing the faculty of concentration and wisdom. Mindfulness, apart from being a basic faculty in its own right, has the important function of watching over the even development of the four, in particular of confidence, which is faith, in relation to wisdom, which is reason, and of energy in relation to concentration or inner calm. Mindfulness is one of the five spiritual faculties, and the others are faith, wisdom, energy, and concentration. Each of these two pairs of faculties should be well balanced for achieving full potency. That is, there should be neither excess and one-sided development nor neglect and underdevelopment in either of these faculties. It is mindfulness that watches over them and acts in a harmonizing factor. The five faculties work together to give me the strength of mind to think, to sense, to feel, and explore, and ultimately release these old habits, old ways of being that have become very strong from years of repeated conditioning. I no longer have the desire to hold on to them as they appear, mainly because I can see them in my mind's eye and recognize them, that they are not me. Later, as my mind started to work, as my mind began to look for these references, you know, as in who I was before all this happened, old habits of reacting to stress in situations where things I had learned what I used to do would sometimes work and sometimes not, brought me more aware of the mind's tendency towards reactivity. I'm learning to investigate and then to consciously let go and not follow through on some of those impulsive ideas or actions that used to be part of the way I thought about things. So that's another place where the chain is broken. Let's see. At one point during my first year of recovery, I wanted to get on a plane by myself and go back east to attend an NMF conference when it would not have really been an advisable plan. My family or my physician thought it wasn't a good idea either. But at the time, my mind was not able to see the situation clearly. But I'm grateful to my family, supported me by helping me to see the situation more clearly. And I'm happy to report that my perceived self-efficacy was not demolished totally, and that my wisdom faculty has gained in strength and ability since that time. My emotions were also affected. I was much more emotionally sensitive back then than I am now. I feel that the balancing presence of the five faculties has a lot to do with this aspect of my experience. In a more negative way of seeing my experience is to recognize that there are holes in my awareness, preventing me from consciously tracking and keeping up with and accounting for everything I feel compelled to follow from previous conditioning. My brain, my mind, does not think, work, register information as fast as it used to on one level. And those are the holes I'm referring to. It doesn't feel referring to my own mind, doesn't feel the urge to compete anymore. But on another nonverbal level, I have a heightened awareness that's capable of synthesizing an incredible amount of information now. Ask me about to add numbers together, and I struggle. Give me a picture to ask, and ask me something unique about it, and I'm usually able to conjure up a replica of it in my mind, and there is where I will go inside and examine it. My mind seems to have very strong absorption tendencies. The thoughts, images, feelings appear to me. They just register more slowly. I watch my body language when I'm around people. How do I stand when I'm speaking with someone? I look for unconscious memories that are stored in my body and in theirs. It's easy to get tripped up in my thinking when that happens, especially when the outside world is expecting something of or from me. At times I feel a little out of step with everyone else. It's as if the holes represent the slowness, the inability to pick up and hold on to and selectively let go of the incessant conveyor belt of information that's coming in through the sense doors. Cardiac arrest I experienced 3 years ago left me with fewer heart and fewer brain cells than I had before the arrest. The ones remaining are damaged, and now they work to heal and regenerate themselves. Following the arrest, I didn't seem to care about or focus on anything long term. I pretty much lived in the present moment all the time. Thinking was hard work. Forced writing, collecting, and connecting thoughts on paper was torture. Spontaneous, uninhibited jibber-jabber was effortless, inspirational, and abundant. When those little brain cells got tickled. Fortunately, the five faculties have strengthened enough to where I'm better able to manage these situations. Deep states of concentration are easy for me to find. I go in with very little attachment or expectation on what I will find or experience. On most occasions, my mind drops like a stone. Maybe it's because it doesn't have that flotation device so many plentiful random thoughts used to provide. This pretty funny. There are two different types of concentration. One that is heavy and dull and seems as if the mind folds in on itself in an oppressive way. This is not right concentration. Right concentration is balance with right effort, wisdom, and mindfulness. Right effort encompasses wisdom and mindfulness. To know what is wholesome, to make the effort to not let the mind sink down into itself or let it go off running with the puppy mind, I call it. Initially, I did not have an awareness of what I could and could not do. I was not able to naturally perceive the consequences of my actions rationally. My interior governor was on the blink. And this includes even my sense of meditation and what I was doing, exploring my own mind during that time. But thank goodness, again, the awareness of my limitations has improved. And I'm more skillful with how I do my meditative practices now. So things are brighter and more intense, but I'm slower. An interesting combination. There's a sense in my mind that's working very hard. It feels like it's a tired muscle sometimes. I'm always trying to strengthen my memory and motor skills by using multisensory and imprint reinforcement techniques. I make diagrams of ideas or concepts, take notes, type passages from books, listen to recorded tapes, sing songs, make up jingles. I entertain myself by dancing around in my house, listening to music or reciting poetry, talking to my cats and reading Dharma books out loud to them. I work on various artistic projects that I have going. I knit scarves, crochet afghans. I challenge myself in any way that I can. When I do things around the house, I bring my awareness to the question, what is this? What can I learn from this? And this is when the wisdom faculty is arising. I pay attention to how and when and where the answers appear. And this can be very loaded and rich with deep and profound insights into the nature of reality. I like to think of the five faculties as muscles that I recognize and develop within the mind every day. It helps to reflect and read on the subject every now and then. When it's time to get up in the morning, I feel as if I'm coming up from a deep sleep. I rarely have memories of my dreams. I'm not certain what it is that signals me to begin servicing from this darkened place. I just know that it's time. I lay in my bed and intentionally call forth my memories of the day before. This is how I rediscover what I made for dinner the night before. Then I move on to what I was working on or doing before I went to bed. Is there something I need to follow up on today? Where did I go yesterday? Did I leave the house? Did I have an appointment with someone today? I reflect on my spiritual practice. Anything new to report, to dwell on there? How is my heart beating? Does it feel regular, irregular, or irregular, irregular? How fast is it going? Am I aware of any pain or unusual symptoms in my chest? How is my breathing? Is there tightness or fullness or evenness in my breath? Am I wheezing? I'm reconnecting my body with my thoughts and felt sensations. I feel like I'm pulling on a warm old coat that I'm only vaguely familiar with. The distance I feel from myself sometimes is so profound and so hard to conjure up at times that I wonder if I will ever make it. Then it's like magic. The generator starts up, the light bulbs go on, and I fall back into some reasonably familiar flow of consciousness, thoughts, and ideas, yet put together with paper clips, post-it notes, and frayed extension cords connecting everything back up together again. I have intentionally, consciously reconstructed my sense of self. All this takes tremendous effort. I call this my memory strengthening practice. I wake up without hunger or thirst. I feel happy and content for the most part. I go to the bathroom and weigh myself. This is important because worsening heart failure can present itself through unexplained weight gain. I brush my teeth. I go downstairs and prepare my breakfast. I do my reflections and practices around food and medication. I return to the bathroom and perform my morning bathing ritual, being careful to sense how my heart's doing. I'm always trying to be conscious of how much stress I'm loading on my heart, engaging how well the medications I take every day are holding me. My defibrillator pacemaker is there for backup if my heart runs into trouble. Knowledge, wisdom, mind knows, has experience of having had to deal with some of these concerns in the past, and so that comes forth to help me deal with something that may come up during that time. Before the rest, I pretty much ate what I wanted, just staying away from foods high in sodium. After the arrest, I lost my desire for food and drink. I now eat what I need. And what I'm discovering are important things to include in my diet. Our bodies are in constant state of regeneration and repair. I don't know why I couldn't see this before. I think of eating as giving my body nutrients and other useful building blocks with which to support this work. It is so obvious now that I see it. I draw things to myself through prayer, reflection, intention, reading, casual conversations, finding missing pieces to the puzzle of healing from brain injury, arrhythmia, heart failure, Marfan syndrome, and now menopause. That was hard, too. I take various vitamin supplements, herbs, and oils. I've researched and found to be good supports for my heart, blood vessels, bones, brain, and menopause. I say grace over my food and medications every morning. I use creative energy, imagery. I imagine that I can see into the worlds of the cells. I imagine all the foods, nutrients, and processes absorbed by the cells. I imagine them as happy, healthy, friendly little cells that are smiling and naturally intelligent. We have a communication system. If they need anything more, they will let me know. They will make requests of me. For instance, I may have an urge to try something new or different that day around a food choice. I might modify a step or a procedure that in some way lets me get to that internal sense of satisfaction, that feeling, that's it. I listen closely to my conversations with others around their health practices and what seems to be working for them, and take notes so that I will have something to refer to later. I pay attention to my thoughts and sensations as they arise in my body. I use my body as an information gatherer and read it as a register. Then I ask, is this appropriate for me at this time? How much will I suffer later if I ignore the wisdom that's here? If I'm happy with the response, then I'll accept them into my body with gratitude, wisdom, discernment, and joy. I eat by the clock. Eating is a very sensuous, full, and rich experience for me. Smells, tastes, and sounds around foods are strong for me. I seem to be able to absorb into the flavors and smells. My awareness seems to go out into object and delight my senses. Mine seems to be without a filter between direct sensation and object. The self-maker is quieter. I can get lost in a bowl of soup or go exploring in a salad. Subtle flavors are enhanced with awareness, and I don't really experience cravings for more than seems appropriate. I don't miss salt either. So much of my own good self-care is realizing that I must at least make an attempt to train the sometimes unruly puppy mind that wants to play and shirk from her responsibilities. Who's in charge here, my playful unruly puppy mind or my wisdom mind? Wisdom mind reminds me not to be so hard on myself if I falter, and at the same time reminds me to balance hard work with delicious play afterward. The middle way incorporates both. I use various props and routines to compensate for my short-term memory disabilities. I have a calendar book that I use to record everything I do and am involved with. I have a system of boxes with check marks and stars and highlighters and stickies. I use a notebook by my phone and make notes as I talk with people on the phone, making sure I indicate the time and date and instructions to myself with check boxes to follow up on later. I use alarm clocks on my watch my kitchen stove clock's set at my to set near my medications. I've recently acquired this cute little digital timer, tea timer. I use it to remind me to check on something as I travel through my house. Multitasking would be impossible for me without these props. I have rules for myself. If I'm cooking and someone calls me on the telephone, I move the cordless phone into the kitchen with me, or I take the pot off the burner before I walk away from the stove to find the cordless phone. When I prepare food, I bring everything out onto the counter and separate it by what I've already used from what's next to go in the pot. This way I avoid over or under seasoning, forgetting, or just uncertain where I put an ingredient. It takes extra effort for me to make something new. I'm constantly rereading, looking for my place in the recipe, reassuring myself that I haven't left anything out or missed a step in the preparation. Pull myself back from daydreaming, planning as I stand stirring the pot, balancing the mind in the present moment, finding neutral. This is very easy for me. But my mind knows how to idle really well. Yet freeing up the energy in that mind to creatively, intuitively determine what needs to happen next, and then doing it with awareness requires effort. And that's the wisdom factor coming back in too. So pulling myself back from daydreaming about or planning requires wisdom and faith. Wisdom to realize that my attention needs to be here in the present moment with a hot stove. Faith is making a mental note to follow up on the idea later, or trusting that it will reappear somewhere, sometime at a more appropriate time. I'd like to talk a little bit now about healing the body with the mindfulness practices and the jhana practice while seated on the cushion. As you know, I use mindfulness to begin to settle the body and mind, to open my awareness, to begin to recognizing the patterns within my body. What's arising today? Is there any discomfort in the body? I explore it with awareness, gently touching and exploring. Mind will naturally track and develop an overview of the situation. I greet the mind and body. Then, using my intuition, I recognize the mind looks to rest and regenerate itself in the body through exploring the jhanas. And I pay attention to what's keeping me focused, what's keeping me from focusing on the breath sensations in my body, and can I detect any of the five hindrances? And this is important because when you attempt to do the jhanas, you need to see if the five hindrances are present. And tuning into the body is one way with which to bring a sense of if they're present for you or not. And the five hindrances are desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness, remorse, and doubt. I recognize the category of hindrances that are at play, and I become mindful of them. If possible, I let go of them, the ones that are troubling me, after I've examined them thoroughly, trusting that if they need to come back, they will at a different time. When the hindrances are at bay and not active, it's possible to have momentary glimpses into the mind directly, sensing the mind's innate qualities of clarity, brightness, and malleability. This perception gets stronger with continued jhana practice. The first four jhanas refresh the mind. The mind generates and releases focused energy from within to produce the first, what are called form jhanas. They're called rapture, joy, tranquility, and equanimity. They represent finer and finer, more subtle sensations that are experienced within the body. These factors begin to balance within the mind. The last four jhanas are felt apart from the body. The body sense drops away. With exercise, practice, you can gain insights, understanding the nature of reality. All things are impermanent, always changing, and therefore not self. Clinging gives rise to suffering and the formation of a false self, false sense of self. When you let go of clinging, the false sense of self lets go as well. The fourth jhana, equanimity, is useful state to strengthen in terms of stepping out of it, stepping out off of this platform and then examining the body. Using concentration can become as a laser beam of awareness that I can look into the mind of my own cells, tiny little energetic beings that comprise my body, and truly see that we are composites. We are made up of tiny charged proteins, molecules, and energy. I converse with the cells through interactive imagery, thoughts, and feelings. I get to know them. Interactive guided imagery is a useful tool. They can let me know when something's not right inside through symbols, set the stage for healing and recovery. This is knowing the self intimately, and all the five faculties are engaged in this process. In the Marfan syndrome, problems can arise with the synthesis and deposition of proteins that make up the microfibrils, which then coalesce to form something called fibrillin, which is a part of connective tissue throughout the body. This results in inherently weakened structures. They're not able to stand up to the average wear and tear placed on the body by the activities that produce repetitive amounts of physical strain. There is a constant chronic healing process going on around buttressing and reinforcing the weakened, damaged areas of the body that are giving way to normal wear and tear. This can produce inflammation and organ remodeling. An example of this is in the aorta, as it exits the heart and travels down the center of the body, splitting into two and traveling down both legs. People with a Marfan syndrome are prone to aneurysm formation and dissection, which is splitting of between the three walls that make up the aorta, and rupture. I understand the scientific information, and I use it as I investigate my body. Something else I use as far as a meditation technique is Method 2, which is taught to me by Tan Jeff of Metta Monastery in Southern California. It is a technique called keeping the breath in mind, and it was taught to him by his teacher Ajahn Lee Damodaro. There are seven basic steps and involve bringing the breath sensation into the body at various points in the body and following, sensing it as it travels through the body and exits the body. I found this to be an excellent practice for me. It truly rejuvenates me and makes me feel more solidly connected to my body and mind. This practice embodies all of the five spiritual faculties as well. My mind does not feel lazy all the time. In fact, there are times in which it feels quite bright. During these times, I allow my mind to dwell with old memories, watching them come before me, healing them, sending them loving kindness, wishing them well, reviewing old mental photo albums, resolving, forgiving, sending metta, blessing. There's a wide range of things involved in healing the mind and body. I see myself in other people, especially when I pick up on and see our similar patterns. I record my insights in my journal. Deep meditation, images appear, interactive imagery is useful in this. I can see a problem or a concern and allow my mind to work with it creatively and then record it as it appears. Awareness has the capacity to heal us, is in us, in our very cells. When illness occurs, our cells feel disconnected and troubled. Bring in help through energetic healing work and cell memory. I've begun working with Chloe Scott in Feldenkrais method. This has been very helpful too. It's just starting now to work with me in that. And it involves neurologically reprogramming your body through body awareness practices, encouraging your body and brain to speak together through touch and pressure and various movements. I'm repeatedly waking up over and over again, being present with myself. I encourage you to see your practice not just as a 45-minute session, but your entire day. Watch mindfully your reactions to things. See if you cannot get drawn into the lull of activity and fall back asleep. And you'll have cultivated the resources to handle the most mundane to the most profound situations life has to offer. The five faculties are the strengths we can develop and use when we investigate and learn through our troubles and difficulties. And now I would just like to have us just quietly close your eyes, and I just want to say this, invoke this blessing for us. And it won't take long. And then I'd like to show you some of the artwork that I've done. May the five spiritual faculties, faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, blossom within each of us. May we be happy, healthy, free from unwholesome feelings, thoughts, and states of mind. May we skillfully reflect on the words of the Buddha, that our hearts would be enlivened and encouraged by the deeper truths that are revealed to us. Thank you. So,
separate from your mind more than an average person? Like, you're identified with your mind, that's our biggest problem.
Yeah.
But because of your special situation, probably you are privileged to feel more separate from your mind?
Words are always tricky when we look at this. Should I put this back on? Words are always tricky when we use them interchangeably and along different lines of thinking. My mind does not feel like it's in my head anymore. My mind feels like it's in my entire body. I don't feel separate from it. Everything in me feels very alive. And that's the heightened sensitivity, I guess you'd say, that I feel. It's funny, it's as if I can kind of see things, the thoughts, I can sort of get a sense in the mind, almost like I can sort of feel them bubble up. Oh, there it comes. And then it goes away. And then there it comes, and there it goes away. And so I have a sense, I can sometimes get a sense that I'm starting to form some self around it. It's like I can almost kind of feel it coming out, like, oh, here it comes. and so it's funny, it's like, you know, it's considered a disability in one way, but in another way, you know, I get to see what's happening more clearly.
It almost feels like that's what we kind of strive for, is to try and get a better connection between our mind and body, and you've been able to do that, and get a real connection between the mind and body. Try to do
is
be really aware of our bodies and things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It seems like, yeah.
Yeah,
it seems like we try to be really aware of our bodies in the moment, in a critical moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, what I have a sense that the mind, the brain, it actually has the capacity to heal itself. And as I say, having knocked down all those old ways of being, just kind of blow them out, just let what I guess was just naturally there develop. And then, you know, now you see this. So that's what it seems like to me. Yes?
Would you discuss the experience of singing? and vibration. And first, the way singing strings together thoughts differently than what you were talking about is feeling the body coming up with, or just talk about the whole world of music.
Oh, the music, yes. Yes, in fact, when I call it tag along with the music, I get very, depending on what the music is, of course, I can get very ecstatic almost, you know, can get very taken away by the music. And I can, in a sense, generate some of that for myself, too, if I start to sing. If I start to sing a happy song or reflect sometimes on something very pleasant around music. Do you ever have thoughts, songs that go through your head repeatedly? And you just kind of, some of them you like and you like to continue, and others you just go, where did that, please go away. I'm very sensitive to when those are showing up in me. And I get a sense that if I give them more attention, or they get stronger, you know, and it's repeated. But if I can give myself permission to say, well, wisdom mind says, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing that right now, then I let it go. But again, it's registering. I feel like the whole body thing registers in the body. You know, it's like we're registers, music, and I have this long, you know, lifey like body. You know, I mean, I just sort of, you know, float away sometimes. But you know, again, it takes control and effort and energy for me to move, because of the way I'm built. You know, so it's so balancing all these factors. But it doesn't stop me from trying to dance. I mean, I have a good time dancing, so. Yeah. Did that help?
Have you focused on or practiced with different types of chant?
Chant?
Formal chant? Listening to it? Not trying to do it or something like that. Listening to different types?
I haven't explored that just yet. But I've got CDs and things like that of chants. The metta chant, I like to listen to that, you know, oftentimes. And again, all these things have, they almost like they get the mind entrained, you know, repeatedly entrained. So I'm aware of those effects, and I'm very sensitive to them. So, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else you might be doing to help that communication with your parts?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of things that I've discovered actually give me a sense of greater connectedness again. I'm reconnecting all what was left up there, so to speak. What didn't get completely fried, still there a little bit. I'm encouraging those to heal, and I'm also encouraging them to build new connections. So, for instance, doing things like knitting. A good friend of mine had a wonderful insight, and she said, Cheryl, what a wonderful, you know, opportunity for you to sit and knit. And it was, I knew how to crochet, that was easy for me. But knitting was a real challenge at first, because I just couldn't get my mind around, how do you get this over there and up there, over there. It was like, but finally, I figured it out and I got it, and then I must have knitted like 5 scarves. I just went crazy because it was like, you know, it got to be where my body started remembering. It was like my fingers started knowing how to do it, and it was, and they were happy, and it was like, we know how to do something again. Isn't this great? So yes, knitting is a wonderful tool, and mindfulness of quilting. That's another thing I've taken up again. Years ago, I did a lot of sewing. And now recently got involved in quilting. So with the Women's Full Moon Gathering, we're making a group quilt here, by the way. It's a project we're taking on. But again, it's giving the idea that you're very mindful, very present with what you're doing, and you're watching your thoughts roll by, and you decide, am I going to go with it or not? What's troubling me? Where do I feel it in my body? It's an awareness practice. And I don't think about the end outcome, like what's it going to look like so much. as knowing that I put the best effort I could into it. That's what really counts. Because it's the present moment of where I live. I tend not to live in the future very much because I've discovered the future is really unreliable. It really is. I mean, we like to think it's really going to be solid and it's going to happen, but hey, come on. I mean, I'm living walking proof of the change that can happen like that. So, yeah. I also paint. I like little painting jobs. I love watercolor. Yeah. Well, I haven't actually painted any of the fiber art just yet, but it's a good idea. Maybe I'll incorporate it. Oh. Yeah. I think, you know, one thing that keeps coming to me a lot is see the beauty in everything. Having a body that's not considered normal, looking like everybody else, like, but then you always say, well, it's normal, but anyway, having, you know, disproportionately long arms and legs and whatnot. I have been part of the National Marfan Foundation for many years. I was a founding member of it, and so I've met many people with this disorder. And what we strive to do within ourselves is to look for the beauty within our bodies. And it's unique and special, and it's just like anybody else's body. It's unique and special. And so, getting a relationship, a friendly relationship with ourselves, with our minds, with our bodies, through whatever means we can, it's a relationship you're having with yourself, ultimately. You really are. I am.